We have to start with last night's game. And we've already got a text in. Once again, 75-272-9429. Texter from the 785 who says, simply enough, horrific game by KU. And you're right. 100% you're right. Especially in the second half. And I wanted to start with K-State here because K-State is a really good team. And I think even the most diehard, I don't even care about K-State, kind of KU fan, was willing to admit heading into yesterday's game, yeah, K-State's really good. And K-State is hard to beat at home. And say whatever you will about the Bramlage crowd. They showed up last night. The student section was as rowdy as I've seen it. The rest of the fan base was really into it. It was an incredible environment at Bramlage Coliseum last night. Players remarked after the game how big of a deal that was. And K-State was just a better team last night. I don't know if K-State in general is better than KU, but the Wildcats are playing better than the Jayhawks right now. There's no doubt about that. Absolutely no doubt about that. And K-State won by playing K-State's game. It was defense first, especially in the second half. KU couldn't get anything going offensively in the second half. Couldn't get anything going. And really couldn't get a whole lot going early on in the first half, too. KU was the better team in that game for about 10 minutes. From the 10-minute mark of the first half until halftime, KU was the better team. Had a 15-4 run. Well, at one point, it was a 15-1 run. At the end of the first half, the offense was clicking. You were getting great bench minutes from Charlie Moore and Mitch Lightfoot. Yes, those two. But those were the only 10 minutes where KU was a better team on the floor. The other 30 minutes were owned by K-State. And I think, to me, when I was watching the game, I thought, second half, wow, K-State figured this out on offense. They figured out the zone. They figured out what they need to do. Looking back, it was not exactly an offensive clinic from Kansas State in the second half. It wasn't like watching this year's Duke team shooting and scoring and dunking from all over the place. That's not what it was. But they got back to their game, and their offense did enough to complement really good defensive play. And credit to K-State as well for shooting the ball really well. Clutch threes all over the place. Early in the game, K-State was knocking down threes. Second half, Cartier Jara, big three. Xavier Sneed, just a cold-blooded three, getting knocked down in the corner, right in front of where I was sitting last night. All the credit in the world to Kansas State. The Wildcats played a great game last night. The defense was fantastic. The offense did enough. And K-State was a better team last night. Then you go to the other side and you go to Kansas. And you're just waiting for this team to flip the switch. And they can't do it. You expect at some point this team is going to figure it out. Because in recent years, there's always been that moment. Last year, partway through the conference season, something just flipped on. And all of a sudden, KU could not be stopped. Just running through teams. Save for a speed bump at the end of the regular season against Oklahoma State. They're just running through teams. It was tough. Certainly wasn't easy. Had to rely a lot on Devontae Graham, Svi Mykhailiuk. But they got it done. They were able to figure it out. Now, 2 years ago, there was never quite that moment. KU never struggled that much in the conference season. That was a really good team in 16-17. But you think the year before that, 15-16, there was a moment in the Big 12 season where you thought, all right, now they've got it in high gear. The year before that, the same. The year before that, the same. When they had all the young guys back in 13-14. But KU's running out of time to have that moment this year. And last night was a perfect time for it. Perfect time for it. If Kansas is able to beat Kansas State on the road in that environment against a K-State team that is really good right now, a K-State team that has won now, after last night, 7 straight Big 12 games, well, that would have been huge for Kansas. But instead, it was the same issues that keep popping up. They couldn't score in the second half. There's not a killer on this team. As good as Dedrick Lawson is, he's not a killer. He's not cold-blooded like that. Xavier Sneed had that moment for K-State last night. And this isn't even a huge critique of Dedrick Lawson because sometimes he doesn't need that. He's so good without having that. Devon Dotson, yeah, he played fine. He played a good game, 13 points, facilitated. But he didn't really have the opportunity to do that either. And no one else in the offense for KU showed up. We were saying yesterday on the show, our keys to the game. For K-State, my key was they needed to figure out the zone. They needed to do something to score against the zone. And you know what the best way to beat a zone defense is? Shoot the lights out. And K-State, give them credit. When the Wildcats needed a big three, they hit a big three in last night's game. They did, especially late in the game. Jaren Sneed, that Sneed one is, that was such a tough shot. Hand right in his face. He gets bumped to the ground after letting it go. Just a tough shot, and he nailed it. For KU, the key was three players in the starting lineup need to have a big offensive game. Essentially, Dedrick Lawson plus two of the other four. Devon Dotson gave you enough if you got a better performance from someone else. They didn't get one. Ochai Agbaji didn't do a whole lot yesterday. Not a whole lot going on. Quentin Grimes gave you 2 3-pointers. That was about it. He did not play a good game. Again. LeGerald Vick, the biggest enigma maybe in all of college basketball this year. Because without him playing at his best, KU is not going to reach its ceiling this year. There's no doubt about that. And he was terrible yesterday. He was truly terrible yesterday. He's in for the first 4 minutes of the game, starting the game. Then he's pulled off and is sitting for the final 16 minutes of the first half. And Self says after the game, yeah, it's more than just a bad offensive start. Then he comes in, doesn't even start the second half, eventually comes in and played most of the second half, but didn't play it well. I go back to those two names I mentioned who played well during that 10-minute stretch of the first half for KU. Charlie Moore and Mitch Lightfoot. A, you would have thought they might play a little bit more in the second half, and I was surprised that they didn't, but you can't rely on those two guys to be your third and fourth best players in a game. If they are and they play really well, that's fine. If Moore had repeated his first half output, if he hit 4 threes in the game, 2 in each half, maybe even that's a different story. If Lightfoot's in there, rebounding a little bit, maybe it's even a different story then. Or at least a closer game. It was a 7-point finish, but it wasn't quite that close, if we're being realistic. But KU didn't get that. K-State took advantage of KU's flaws, and KU still doesn't have an answer for all of those faults. And again, it's been the same thing every single time this happens for KU. They can't close on the road. And again, talking about KU and all of its faults and not being able to close out games and all of this, I don't want to take anything away from Kansas State. Kansas State right now, right at this moment, is still the hottest team in the Big 12 and is playing like the best team in the conference right now. I don't agree with Bill Self in the sense that it's too early to still talk about these things, even though the race is shaping up at this point. Everyone's halfway through. I do agree that you can't focus on just the race for the championship, because then KU, which is already losing sight of a lot of its issues on the court, is going to lose sight of even more. K-State's in a very firm place in the driver's seat. Now, these two teams have another meeting coming up on February 25th in Lawrence. That's going to be tough. That's going to be really tough. But the way K-State's playing right now, it's going to be tough to beat them anywhere. It is going to be tough to beat these Wildcats anywhere right now. Again, 7 straight conference wins. I have no idea how they could not beat Texas A&M. Like, that game makes absolutely no sense to me. I get it, A&M played the zone, K-State wasn't ready. Okay, sure. They seem to do okay against the KU zone. And I know, there are other factors that go into that. Preparation, practice, knowing what K-State has done in the past, experience, all of that. K-State right now has been the hottest team in the conference, and they are deservedly in the driver's seat, and KU has a lot of work to do. I mean, there's no getting around it. KU, I mean, you say they absolutely get a share of the conference title if they finish the year 7-1? Maybe? That's not easy to do in the Big 12. That's not easy to do in the Big 12. Text from the 785 chiming in saying K-State deserved that game. KU can't finish a game, let alone be consistent. And I agree. I agree with that completely. K-State was the better team last night. There is no getting around that. Everybody filled their role well. Another texter from the 785 chiming in saying K-State wins by 15 if they hit their free throws. Yeah, K-State was bad at the line last night. That was another thing. Before hitting a pair late, K-State was 9 of 18 on their first 18 free throw attempts last night. They were not good at the line. I thought that was going to actually play a major role in the game late, but then KU couldn't get anything going. Hit a couple meaningless threes. And then K-State came right down the court and hit their free throws at the very end. No, it was not nearly as close as 7 points would dictate. No doubt about it. There's one thing I want to touch on here really quick, though, as we cap off this segment before we take our first break here on 5D Sports Talk today. The dunks at the end of the game. First of all, Cartier Jara. And we'll talk to Tim Fitzgerald about this at the bottom of the 4 o'clock hour. I was standing right next to Fitz during pregame warmups for K-State. And Cartier, multiple times, ran all the way baseline to baseline and attempted that windmill dunk and missed short. Like, ball right on the front of the rim missed short. And I thought, dang, I didn't even know he could jump that high, let alone get close to that. Then he pulls it out during the game. And I tell you what, sitting where I was on that baseline, right where he dunked that ball at the end, you could see guaranteed he was going to try that move. And it was incredible. And that dunk is going to be played on every K-State hype video for years to come, if not forever. That was an iconic moment for Kansas State basketball. Then there was the dunk, which I don't actually believe counted at the very end of the game, by Barry Brown. Gets another steal. KU gives it away with 6 seconds left or something. He runs down the court. He jams it as time expires. And then after the game, he was asked about it and said, hey, you know, what'd you think of that? Would you regret doing that? And he said, absolutely not. He remembered a moment from his freshman year when KU's Brandon Green did just that same thing at KU in the Sunflower Showdown. And he even capped off his response by saying, so shout out Brandon Green. And look, KU fans, I get it. Like, it stings because that was a rough game and you lose to your in-state rival and all that, but please don't go out with some, that's the kind of play people remember. Well, guys, this was the retribution. You don't get retribution for this. This was the retribution for Brandon Green several years ago. I don't care. And I don't care about court storming either. We've been over this before many times. Storm the court. As long as you do not put a player, a coach, a referee, or a media member trying to do their job in danger, I don't have a problem with storming the court. And if you're mad about it, well, then win the dang game. If you're mad that a team is storming the court, I don't care that they're first in the Big 12. They're unranked and they beat their rival. If you're mad about it, then your team should have won the game. That's how I've always stood. And again, if someone is in danger, like when this happened several years ago in Manhattan and Jamari Traylor of KU got pushed, you can't be pushing essentially an innocent bystander at that point, shoving them, provoking them, blindsiding them, whatever. No, that is not okay. And there should be repercussions for that. But just running on the court, celebrating, as long as everyone's doing all right, just let it happen. It's fun. Let them have fun. Let them enjoy it. What is a big deal is K-State's 7-2 in the Big 12 and looking like one of the best teams in the country right now. AP poll be damned. I mean, they look fantastic. They look really good. And KU's got issues to figure out. It's not over for KU. The Big 12 title streak is not over for Kansas. No doubt. They still have a chance. They have to figure it out, and they have to figure it out quickly. Like, win 7 of their last 8 games figured out quickly. That's essentially what KU is facing at this point. Last night was an extremely emotional night in Manhattan. K-State fans did not get Sandstorm. They wanted it. They wanted it badly. They did not get Sandstorm. They got Turn My Swag On by Soulja Boy. They got The Hum. Kansas fans were a little shook by that. They did not get Sandstorm. However, that did not stop the K-State student section from the Bleep KU chant. That was common all night long. Texture from the 785 asked if that chant was present, and yes, that chant was present. A lot. All night long. The first one happened before the game. There were chants of FBI when the first two KU players walked in the court. It was Dedrick Lawson and Mitch Lightfoot.
I like what they threw. Did you see what the student section threw up in the air? They threw $100 bills with Bill Self's face on it, and it said, "In Adidas, we trust."
That stuff comes back to bite you when you lose, but when you win and you relish that kind of thing for forever. Another text from the 785 chiming in saying, "I've been skeptical about K-State all year, but last night solidified it for me that that team is for real." And yeah, I've been sold on them for a little bit longer than that, but I think a lot of people have come around on that. They look really good. Really good. That defense is stellar. I do think that's a better defense than Texas Tech. And call it recency bias if you want, but that defense is legit. And if their offense is even decent, they're going to win a lot of games down the stretch. That is a really good team. Thanks for all the texts. Make sure you keep sending those our way. 75-272-9429. Want to hear all your thoughts, K-State and KU alike, about last night's Sunflower Showdown. Right now, we're going to get into a little buy or sell. Going to go away from KU and K-State here for a moment, though, Marco. My first one, Max Kellerman of ESPN fame today, said that Patrick Mahomes, yes, the NFL MVP first-year starter for the Kansas City Chiefs, is right now the most important player in sports, period. So, buy or sell, Patrick Mahomes right now is the most important player in sports.
Yes, I will. I'll buy that. And I don't know. I'll buy it because he's the most dominant player in the most known league out there, the NFL. That's higher than MLB. That's higher than NBA, NHL, MLS. If you're the best player in the best league in America, you're the most important sports player. He is the face of the NFL, or the future face of the NFL. You know, I thought maybe Mike Trout. That would be the next guy behind him who's close. That's who I would put competing with Mahomes for that. But I would have to buy that.
I'm buying it too, and I'm even admitting that feels like a gigantic overreaction, because it really kind of does. He's only been in the NFL for 2 years. He's got 17 regular season starts, 19 if you include the postseason. But what was the most common, and other than general things like this Super Bowl sucks, what was the most common thread on social media, just talking with your friends, any of that on Super Bowl Sunday? It was, you know what this game needs? Patrick Mahomes. And I don't even think that's necessarily just us here in the greater Topeka, Kansas City area. You look across social media, from national writers, just from beat writers, just from people you know, everyone was saying that all over the country. This game needs Patrick Mahomes. And I think right now he's the number one alternative, at least in the AFC, to the New England Patriots. And you bring up the best point that the NFL is still the most popular league. And if the Chiefs make the Super Bowl next year, for example, those rating slides over the last couple of years, they will completely reverse. You will get all-time ratings if Patrick Mahomes is in the Super Bowl next year. Yeah. It feels like an overreaction, but man, I really think it's true.
Yeah, and you know what's kind of the crazy part is we haven't even gotten to scheduling, but I think the Chiefs had about 6 primetime games this year. It's not going to double, but it's only going to go up, I feel like. Because everybody's going to want to watch what Mahomes... They're going to want to watch Mahomes on a football field. It's just simple as that. If the NFL cares enough about their ratings that much, the Chiefs, they would put him in every primetime game if they could. But he's definitely going to be filling some time slots out next year when the whole season comes out. But I'll go ahead and go to one of mine. We'll go back to KU, but we'll do the football side with National Signing Day today. KU football had 19 players commit after having 0. They will finish in the top half of the Big 12, not this year, but in the next year. Get some experience underneath these kids.
The top half of the Big 12. So let's assume Oklahoma's up there, Texas is up there. Mm-hmm. Those are your two guarantees, I think.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I still think TCU will be up there. As long as Gary Patterson is there, they will be good. And his record following down years is so good that I think TCU will be fine for the next couple of years. So you throw TCU near the top, and then you've just got a mess of teams. Baylor is getting better. They're still Kansas State, which is, I don't think, going to see a huge change, honestly, from late-stage Bill Snyder to early-stage Chris Klieman. I really don't think there's going to be a huge change there. Texas Tech looks like it's in trouble, but I really like the Matt Wells hire. I think they're going to be in the mix. Iowa State, West Virginia. Don't know what's exactly going to happen with them, but I love the Troy Brown hire too. I think the Big 12 across the board, fantastic football hires this year for all those open jobs. I am going to sell it, but I still think you have a very slim outside chance. I don't even want to say very slim. But there's a small but realistic chance there's still bowl eligibility on the line next year. You could finish 6th, 7th, heck, 8th, maybe, if things get really wonky.
Right, right.
In the Big 12 and still end up with 6 wins. So I'm actually going to say, I'm going to sell it. But I don't think that necessarily means that 6 wins is out of the question.
I'm with you on that one. I was gonna sell it too, simply because those kids will still be sophomores going into that year, I think. And I think that, like you said, the Big 12 is going to be too strong up top with Oklahoma, Texas guaranteed, TCU, Gary Patterson with his track record. But that's where I ask questions because all the mess. But yeah, I'm going to sell it too, but I'm with you on that one. You bring up a good point about the bowl eligibility. I didn't think about that. So yeah, KU, that would have been a better buy or sell question about KU making the next bowl game. But yeah, I agree with you on that one.
This is a really good class for KU this year.
It really is.
And I think for K-State too. I think both teams in the state did a really good job. We'll have plenty more about that coming up later in the show when we talk to Tim Fitzgerald of GoPowerCat.com and Scott Chasen of Fog.net. One more buy or sell for me here. And we'll go back to the Sunflower Showdown teams. This is a question we've asked a few times, and I think we can keep asking it, maybe not every week, but almost every week, the rest of the Big 12 season. Buy or sell, the league is still a two-horse race between K-State and KU.
I'll buy that because KU's remaining schedule is pretty soft right now. They still have to play Baylor at home, West Virginia at home. Who else they got? Oklahoma State at home.
K-State at home.
K-State at home, which I think that you can still win that game.
I think so, too.
Because K-State, they had the crowd behind them yesterday. This class that they have, the senior class, they have lost to KU so many times, especially last year with the close one, Allen Fieldhouse. But then you go to Norman. You go to Stillwater again. You go down to Tech. I think that they can do it. You blew out Tech at home. I think you can still do it down there. But that's the one place where I'll say that's the game that they probably could lose. That's the one that you can lose. They're going to lose. That's the one they can lose. But I agree with you. Yeah, I think that it's still two-headed race between those two teams.
I'm going to sell because I think those two are still in it. I'm not writing KU off. I know it's a game and a half. I know there's only 8 left for Kansas, 9 for K-State. I'm not writing KU off, because we've seen them work some magic before. Granted, teams with more experience and maybe just more talent all the way through the roster onto the bench, but I'm not writing KU and Bill Self off just yet. But I'm going to say I still think Iowa State has an outside chance, because Iowa State right now is the second-best team actively after K-State, I think, at the conference. I still think Baylor is going to crumble. I do not think Baylor is good enough to hang on all the way through 18 games of the Big 12 schedule. I don't think Texas Tech will finish in the top 3 as competitive as they will be down the stretch, because they just don't have enough offense. But I do think Iowa State has an outside chance. I think it's a 3-horse race, K-State, then KU, with Iowa State somewhere in the mix there too. I think all 3 of those teams still have a decent shot at the Big 12 title this year. Welcome back to 580 Sports Talk, 526 on this Wednesday afternoon. Brendan Dwarzynski flying solo with you in our 580 studios up on Huntoon Hill. Britt Zweigert, our producer-engineer, across the glass. And we are joined now on the phone by Scott Chasen of 24/7 Sports and Fog.net. Make sure you head on over there for all you want to know about KU athletics, basketball, football. Tons of content from Scott, Michael, and the rest of the gang over there at Fog.net on National Signing Day today. Scott, I assume it's been a pretty busy day for you guys.
Yeah, no, not really anything going on I can think about. I slept until 2 p.m. It was beautiful.
Yeah, I'm sure may do that tomorrow after a long day covering National Signing Day. I have to get your opinion here just on the class in general, because to me, this is a stellar class for Les Miles, his first recruiting class at KU, probably about as well as he possibly could have done, given the scholarship numbers, which we still don't, I guess, know an exact number about. But to flip Stephen Parker, to get some other players to flip, a lot of 3-star recruits, to me, this is about as well as Les Miles could have done. What's your first inclination about this recruiting class?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's always going to be a stigma on recruiting that it's very easy to hype you up and get really positive because you haven't seen any of these kids, right? So you know, guys start in high school, you fall in love with them as a prospect, and you really like them. But, I mean, look, the fact of the matter is that I think you nailed it in saying, I mean, not only this was about the best he could have done. I mean, KU, this was a home run in terms of what they added today alone. I mean, take Stephen Parker out of the equation, the kicker they got in the last 2 days leading up to signing day. They landed 7 commits today, and I spoke with one coordinator who told me every single recruiting battle they were in the final day, they won. And the fact of the matter is, if there were some they lost, there were some that maybe we didn't really know about because, yeah, it does appear like they just flat out won pretty much everything that came down to the wire. You're dead on with saying they flipped guys. I mean, you know, whether it's from Kansas State or Texas Tech or wherever, I mean, the fact of the matter is they went out and won some major recruiting battles. Stephen Parker's obviously won. You know, I talked with the assistants, multiple assistants, a lot about today. That's the one that's going to get the most praise because he's a 4-star, and rightfully so. I mean, they beat Nebraska for him, and obviously Texas Tech. This wasn't, you know, a 4-star like, you know, even a situation where at Michigan a kid, you know, maybe they don't have space for him and you come in and swoop in at the right time. That was a great pickup for them with Amari. But the fact of the matter is that, yeah, the Stephen Parker deal is a huge deal for KU football, and it will be a bigger deal, you know, if it does turn into something down the line. I definitely agree, though. This was a stellar day for Les Miles, and I think it was everything you could have asked for and then some.
Looking at Gavin Potter, who flipped from K-State to KU, he has the whole K-State hoodie on when he does his announcement today, then takes it off and has a Texas Tech shirt, then takes that off and his chest is painted for KU. To have a win like that, and really winning any recruiting battles against other Power 5 or Big 12 schools, that is a big deal for KU at this point in time. But to get a kid like that who is honestly pretty cocky, but has that attitude, has that edge, and to beat out your in-state rival for them, what is that kind of symbolic meaning for KU?
First of all, you know, forget symbolism. It was awesome. Like, I mean, that was one of the coolest things I've seen in a while. That was like was it Cliff Alexander who picked up the wrong hat and then put the
yes.
right one on? Or,
Illinois yeah, fans like, still get on me for that.
Yeah, it was the coolest. It was like the even cooler version of that for him to rip that off and someone wrote Jayhawks on his back and his number 12. Yeah, I mean, look, the fact of the matter of the things, this was a kid in Oklahoma who felt in many ways that, yeah, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State weren't in on him like they should have been. I think he told reporters after his announcement that it's going to be the biggest mistake they've ever made that they let him get out of the state. Now, obviously, there might be just a touch of hyperbole in that one. I think Oklahoma's doing fine. But the fact of the matter is, yeah, this is a kid that earned a late offer from Oklahoma State and his recruitment. But, you know, by that point, it was really a case where, you know, KU, K-State, those schools had done some work. The K-State assistant that was recruiting him left. And again, that left the door open, and that's what you can ask for from a guy like Les Miles. Les Miles is not going to be able to, you know, as much as his name provides, he's not going to be able to beat out guys who have built relationships over 2 years, over 3 years. We had a story up on our site from Michael Swain where Tony Hull kind of talked about, look, you know, the last 48 hours he's been helping the other assistants because the type of player that he wants to recruit, you know, those 4-stars and whatnot, you have to have a long, extended relationship with those guys that goes back a long, long time. And I think you saw that with Stephen Parker and Emmett Jones. Jones had known Parker for a long while. He previously coached at South Oak Cliff, where obviously Parker played in high school and had been recruiting him to Texas Tech, had him committed at Texas Tech. That's a very strong, you know, that's how you land a 4-star. And that's the other reason you look at this and say, yeah, well, KU's average recruit grade is, I want to say, 8th in the Big 12, ahead of K-State and Texas Tech. Well, part of that's hurt by having the smaller class. I think that hurts the numbers. But also, I mean, the fact of the matter is they didn't have, this looks like Les Miles was recruiting guys while he was not coaching. I mean, he was waiting. He had to jump back into the fold of things. So that's also why I think it is. Maybe that's what it's symbolic of, just the idea that, you know, in a very short amount of time, they picked their spots, they got the guys they could. They focused on the right guys. They identified the right guys who were talented, who could also fit the program. And if Les Miles is hyping this class up the way he is, he knows that comes with expectations. He's not a dumb guy. He's very smart. So if he's hyping them up as, you know, being the building block or whatever to winning championships or whatnot, then obviously he feels pretty good about it too.
We're joined by Scott Chasen of Fog.net and 24/7 Sports here on 580 Sports Talk, breaking down the Kansas National Signing Day recruiting class. And you mentioned that quote from Les Miles about this is a group that can win championships. And you think of a guy like Gavin Potter, or you look at Amari Pisak-Hickson, who was the Michigan commit, who Michigan told him, hey, look, we're not going to have room for you, and they're bringing someone else in, so his recruitment opens up late, KU swoops in. We were discussing this earlier, that I think for this team at this point in time, having players with that kind of attitude or with an edge or with a chip on their shoulder is exactly what this team needs. They need sort of a hunger, almost, if you want to go with that cliche, to get over the hump and know that, look, we may not be the most talented, but people doubted us, and we're going to go 110% every time. And I think having players that either feel they were doubted, like maybe Pisak-Hickson does, or just have that kind of cocky attitude, a little bit like Jaden Russell, what Gavin Potter obviously has, do you think that is going to play a tangible role for this class going forward?
Oh, yeah. I think attitude is extremely important. I mean, think about, you know, the guys I can't help but think about are Dorrance Armstrong and Daniel Wise, two guys who are softly spoken. But, I mean, Texas guys who end up at Kansas, and there's a reason why. I mean, you talk to Daniel Wise about playing in that Texas game. I think you understand it. It means a little bit more to him. And, you know, obviously those were two very dramatic examples of Kansas success stories, guys who are, you know, both soon going to be playing on Sunday. Certainly one was already. But, I think absolutely that attitude, especially at a place like Kansas, because if you try and play the game where you're just going to recruit the same guys everyone else is, against slightly worse guys, it's very difficult. You have to do crazy things schematically to overcome the obvious inherent disadvantages that come with that. If you're taking the same guy Alabama's taking, he's just less athletic and less good at this. You know, it hurts you. So I think that's where you look to make it up and say, who are the guys who are on the cusp of that, but have that mentality that's maybe a little different. Maybe it's not any more hungry than a five-star recruit or a guy who's worked all the way to get there, but maybe you add in that chip of feeling slighted, of feeling whatnot. I mean, even think about basketball, Kansas State playing Kansas yesterday. I mean, those Kansas State seniors hadn't beat Kansas in 8 games, their whole time at K-State. You don't think that had them a little bit extra fired up to play in that game? So, yeah, I absolutely think that's I don't know if that's the number one thing they would go after when they're identifying guys. But I can tell you this, the staff is very confident. I talked to Emmett Jones, who basically told me he doesn't feel like there's a guy that he is in the state of Texas, that is, that he would back down from, another school he would back down from, or think, well, they've got this guy. So, you know, I guess I'm just out of luck here. And I think that mentality shows, too, in the guys they go after. They really go after guys who think, you know, pretty much they could play anywhere. They're just looking for the place that prioritizes them.
We've mentioned a couple of names of guys in this class, Russell and Potter and a few of these other guys, Parker, obviously. Is there anyone we haven't mentioned yet who you think KU fans should be on the lookout for who could be a quick contributor this freshman year?
Yeah, two. I'll give you a serious one and then a semi-serious one. Well, there's three, actually. Thomas McVitie is one, quarterback. I think he's got a great chance to start based off everything I've heard. Les Miles said he'd been recruiting him since he was 12, so that's obviously means that there was a bit of a connection or tie there. And yeah, I mean, look, this was Chip Lindsey's first choice at quarterback, and Chip Lindsey, the system that they run at Mesa, the JUCO Thomas McVitie was at, it was a dream fit. But I would still expect, at this point at least, him to start. When talking about other quarterbacks, he kind of unprompted made a comment like, well, if Thomas McVitie is your starter, then X, Y, and Z. And I think you really wouldn't say that unless that's on your mind kind of for unrelated reasons there. One other name that really stands out to me, Dejon Terry, 350 pounds. I expect him to maybe not start, but play a heavy role in the defensive line right away. You know, Kansas has something like 15 or so offensive linemen returning from the last team. I may be off on that number by one or two. And so when you have that depth, they didn't feel the need to add any more offensive linemen. So really they went out and prioritized the D-line, and he would be a guy who could fill in for a Daniel Wise. He won't be as good year one, but if you're going to stick him in the middle, you need that big body and that, you know, 350 pounds. He gives you that. And then finally, one more name, Jacob. I don't know how to say his last name, Borsilla, maybe, the kicker. Les Miles just mentioned, I mean, first of all, if you scholarship a kicker, that means you really like that kicker. And Les Miles said he had range out to 60 yards, which you can actually see some videos on his Twitter where he's approaching that. I wouldn't call that a small pickup either. If you need a kicker, you go out there and get a guy who has at least one other offer, who has interest in schools like Cincinnati and Arizona, and you can bring that guy with a 60-yard cannon for a leg. I think that's a good, valuable pickup. And I think that could have helped KU in games of the past where they came up just a little bit short.
Scott Chasen of 24/7 Sports and Fog.net joining us here. Make sure you follow along with Scott, Michael Swain, Sean Collins, everybody over at Fog.net, all the great content they push out for National Signing Day, KU basketball, KU football during the regular season, and all of that. Scott, thank you so much for the time.
Thanks for having me.